caviar chillings for breakfast. I want caviar chillings for lunch. I want caviar chillings for supper. Then I'll wash it all down with scotch. I want caviar chillings for breakfast. I want caviar chillings for lunch. I want caviar chillings for supper. Then I'll wash it all down with scotch. Now I'm feeling frantic. Never no bump or no log. Always so crazy manic while getting high on the hog. I want caviar chillings in the morning. I want caviar chillings all day. I want caviar chillings at bedtime. Then I wash it all down with scotch.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now stay tuned for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Let's get down to the bones of it today. How you doing out there? It's April the 17th, 2009. Beautiful sunshine, getting a little warmer. Who knows? Maybe spring will be here before summer officially is. Still waiting for a couple days in a row of warmth, I guess. So, this is the new WHFR Journal. It's local news and views based on stories from the Dearborn Times-Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide and other things that I discover along the way. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR. Remember, do as I say, not necessarily as I do if I mess up anything. That's a message to our all-volunteer staff. An exciting day today because we actually are beginning our week, or actually 9 days, of getting your attention about Radiothon 2009. It's our pledge drive week. That's right. We need money. We are not a commercial station. We have no way to get money other than your donations and a small stipend that we get each year from the college, which is only equal to what the other sponsored activities get. So we don't get any more or less than the other major sponsor activities like theater and the newspaper and the music program. And we need your help. And beginning today, some exciting pledge incentives on the Highway 61 show. We always do two pledge drives in terms of the Highway 61 show on Fridays from 2 to 6 because, well, we have so many great pledge incentives, and we have so many callers, at least we have in the past. And so the drive officially and continuously starts on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and goes all the way through Saturday the 25th. And some great activities, too, that we're sponsoring off campus, a couple benefit concerts, one tomorrow night that we'll tell you more about this hour, and several other things going on this week on campus where WHFR is going to be involved, and we'll be taking pledge donations, but you can meet and greet us at Earth Day on campus here during the day, and HFCC Open House is going to be on Tuesday in during the day from 10 till 2 and the evening from 5 to 8, and our WHFR studios will be open for all of our WHFR friends and interested parties, listeners, to come and take little tours, and that's going to be fun to meet you in person. No charge for the tours, but if you want to throw a couple bucks in the kitty, you know, it is our pledge week once a year. It's essential. 60-70% of all of our essential operating budget, no salaries. We're all volunteers, exception of yours truly, who's paid by the college as the station advisor, and just two others that are also part-timers paid by the college. So all this money, 100%, goes to help the college. So don't have to call now, but we'll give you all that information from 2 to 6 today. And so by all means, you know, stay by your phones, go to your computers during that period, and we'll give you all the information about really some exciting special pledge incentives, thanks to a lot of our friends in the community, especially Village Ford in Dearborn here. And I'm joined in the studio just now. I think he's got his headphones plugged in by our guest host and a host of one of our great Saturday morning forum shows, Ned Apigian. So this is the mic check time. Ned, tell us what you've been doing today.
It's not what I'm going to do. It's what I'm going to do, not what I did. I haven't done much today.
Oh, okay. Well, you're starting the day with a bang then, with WHFR.
Right.
.fm, the station making waves.
Went to the bank and paid my bills.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, I did...
we have some guests today, don't we?
Well, I was expecting a few people, and in case they forgot, I don't want to cast aspersions on their... existence. If they do show up, we will make room for them. We have the available microphones. If not, well, we tried. But I do want to talk about several events, including the event that they were going to talk about. And I'll do that later. We'll give them a chance to see if they show up. Well, it's quite tragic, but it did happen shortly before, and it was ongoing during this show last week. The murder and then suicide. Two people died here on campus. Again, the cause of one person. And you've read about it, heard about it on the news for a long time now. And I just wanted to, again, my sympathies, condolences to, of course, the family of the student that was killed here. There's going to be memorial services coming up for her on campus next week, Thursday, I believe. And you can get all kinds of information about that and what's happened here at the college out of sympathy and for very practical reasons. We have closed the Fine Arts Building where the event took place. There's going to be a lot of classes have been relocated elsewhere on campus, except for art classes and the telecom class that uses the TV studio, which is sort of in the north part of the Fine Arts Center. That north wing with the art department classes and the telecom TV studio is still being used for classes, but the rest of the building is closed to students and classes, and those classes have been relocated. It's all on the website of Henry Ford Community College. That's hfcc.edu, and probably everybody has found that out already. So I'm not going to go into any further details about that. I did see a couple of articles in the paper, and again, I wasn't going to start with this story, but as long as I'm talking about it now, that I thought were quite useful in thinking about what this all means. We're always trying to find meaning in things that perhaps have no meaning, have no explanation. It's a crazy, unfortunate, tragic moment. What little I heard on the news, and I don't even want to mention the person's name because I don't want to glorify the choice that he made, either the murder or the suicide, as a response to what he thought was the situation. But apparently he was quite troubled. Apparently he had been prescribed drugs for depression, which he was not taking. He had expressed himself, and many people already have seen on TV, his YouTube videos of ranting and complaining. And even on the very day that, even on last Friday, before he came to the campus, still looking for those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, just let me continue, glancing here again. I was set up for our guest and,
the problem is you can't make sense out of the senseless.
No. And we're certainly not trying to, in that regard. The police, the story in the Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday, there's a couple of things that we wanted to say here about that. Police seek reasons for fatal incident, although it's not really the job of the police department, you know, but I think everyone would like to know the detailed reasons. But there aren't things that, I mean, there can't be any good reasons. I mean, reasons in his mind, perhaps, if he was reasonable at all at the time he did this. And so I don't really care about that story. But this week, here's a story from Jody Rampala, grief counseling available following murder. College life began returning to normal Tuesday for students and faculty at Henry Ford Community College following the deadly shooting. And, of course, the woman who was killed, her name is Asia McGowan.
A student
here. She was in theater classes, theater class maybe even at the time, and she was also in one of our telecommunication classes, not one of mine. She's
presumably a young woman, right?
Yes, 20 years old. And I'll read a little bit about her if people want to know a little bit about that. But we have been doing everything, I think, right. I think our college administration, and they don't pay me to say this, and we haven't got a press release from them about this. But I think they've been doing everything right here and trying to answer the resulting problems and questions in the minds of students on campus as well as faculty and staff. And they've been doing grief counseling and had informative meetings. Our director of public information, Sue Brown, the meetings were private, not open to the media. But the student meetings were of course, different, but were separate from the faculty. But they were also private, not open to the media, so that any questions that people wanted to ask or sharing their feelings or concerns, that all could happen, that we have to socialize these things. We have to come together, hear the many different opinions, and then deal with it. And it's a good way to get over whatever your response is, whether it's grief. I saw some people in absolute tears last Friday. Here on campus, who hadn't even witnessed the event, and other people like myself and others who were just mad that it happened at all, mad at the person that did it. And of course, that's not appropriate response either. Again, understanding, compassion, but you know, emphasizing always that these things are not good choices, and that no one should be involved in killing anyone else at any time for any reason. Now, that's going a little beyond what some of you listening may believe. I'm a pacifist. People know that. I always believe that there is a nonviolent solution to every situation, and we have to look for it and work towards it to the greatest extent possible. Sometimes it's not possible, I know, but we're not doing enough, I think, as a society, if as a world, to eliminate violence in everyday life. In fact, the signs are not good, as we hear international news about this country and that, whether they're pirates or terrorists or whatever. It seems that violence always is a ready and seemingly easy answer for any problem you have, and it is not. Violence begets violence. I think I'm quoting some famous biblical passage there.
At our weekly meeting for radio staff, you had mentioned that everything that's been written about this incident is not exactly true. Is there something you know that you could correct that people have been reading that would be a great contribution?
There,
well, what was reported incorrectly.
Well, thank you, Ned. I know it's the nature of reporting, and I'm not criticizing. I mean, first of all, the early broadcast from reporters that came from the television channels here on campus at 1 o'clock, at 2 o'clock, at 3 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, it was difficult to get all the detailed facts, and some of them were wrong because they were hearsay or based on limited information coming to them from the police. Then there was a press conference at 5 o'clock by our vice president and acting president, in fact, Marge Swan. She's the controller, that is the head of the business area on the campus, and she was the one that was here that afternoon, Good Friday afternoon. A lot of people start their Easter weekend early, but so she did a press conference and tried to clarify things for people at that time, and then the news reports became a little more accurate and things were more clear, and the police released more information on Saturday morning. So first of all, news that's new is always going to lack a lot of information, and some of it will be inaccurate. So I don't want to, you know,
it's natural.
Draw coals for home. Right.
Everybody has to meet their deadline.
Right. That's one, and a deadline, right. The deadline for the papers, for example, the Press and Guide that came out last Sunday didn't know a lot and did have some things, some minor details that were slightly wrong. And this is a good lesson, myself as a telecom professor for 40 years. We always want to let people know that what you're watching on television, listening to on the radio, or even reading in the newspapers, some of it, and in some cases, unfortunately, some of the substantial, most important parts of it may be just wrong. Okay, it may be interpreted wrong, or the facts may actually be wrong. And so you have to, the only answer for a rational person these days is to delay a response or an opinion.
And wait for the news, the weekly news magazines.
You can wait a few days. That makes sense. To have an informed opinion, if anybody asks you, or to take action on your own, you're going to need to wait a few days. Or, as we do on this show, we look at both papers in Dearborn. There's two papers. Compare the stories. Okay, they're not the same. I learned this lesson in high school, and it was a rather stupid research report. But in high school, all we had at my high school, which was Flat Rock High in southern Wayne County, was for research, was a number of encyclopedias. We didn't have original source books. We didn't have any room for that. But we had three or four complete editions of different encyclopedias. At the time, there was a World Book Encyclopedia. And it was all print. There was no internet in the dark ages when I went to high school in the 60s. Okay, it wasn't that long ago to me. Anyway, so I did this story on a French philosopher and dramatist from the 16th century, and I compared these encyclopedia articles. I mean, big professional books written by scholars who should know. And they didn't agree on this guy. Didn't agree when he was born. Didn't agree on when he died. In fact, one of the articles didn't even know when he died. Approximately, they didn't, you know, they couldn't even give a year. They weren't sure of that. And he was a major public figure in France, okay? A major dramatist, major philosopher of the day, about the same period of time that William Shakespeare lived in England. In fact, he visited England once. And even that visit in that particular year, the four encyclopedias I used differed on that. So if you're going to Wikipedia.com, folks,
where are they getting
the internet,
their information?
Well, I'm saying it's only one person writing that. Other people try to add and correct. It's an interesting effort, but you're still not going to get it totally right, even if it's a prestigious publication like, you know, the encyclopedias were in those days, which were our only general resource information. They were always updated every couple of years. We didn't have old encyclopedias. We had the latest editions, and they were still disagreed about this one gentleman, and I suspect they disagreed on a lot of other things, too. And, of course, things keep changing in science. Now there's only 8 planets, not 9, but that's a definitional issue about, you know, is Pluto a planet or only a dwarf planet?
You know what's interesting about that subject you just brought up? It's true with any subject. I didn't study this personally, but if you look at the encyclopedias based on the years they're published of a very dramatic event, let's say September 11th, 2001, mm-hmm. Every 10 years, as though if you go back into events, the issue gets clouded, it's briefer, and less information is given about this very valuable date. And I'm not thinking about that date. I'm And the case I was thinking about was the burning of the city of Smyrna in the 1920s. If you look at your encyclopedias, they give great detail as to what it was all about. Actually, it was a genocidal act. You look at the later ones, and they said, well, there's a conflagration of the city of Smyrna. Gives you nothing else. Meanwhile, individuals were driven into the sea. Allied ships were there picking up survivors. Some refused to pick them up. Political questions. But the information gets diluted. The further back it goes, right, the more foggy it becomes.
And people begin making judgments who are doing that updating or the rewriting about how significant a certain action was. And maybe their opinion is, especially if they weren't there, is less, they see it as less important than it was originally in the scope of other things that were happening at that time. But that's their opinion. Maybe they didn't come from that area. Maybe they grew up in Australia or Japan or whoever was writing it, and so it just doesn't seem as relevant to them as it was. And your show, let's plug your show, because we're going to be preempting it this week, folks. It normally be on the fourth Saturday of each month. And we're going to have a special sort of, since it's part of our pledge drive, a week from tomorrow, on the 25th of August, Ned and a couple of the others are going to come in and give you little samples of shows they've done so well in the past. Ned's show is what I would refer to as intellectual history. He has intellectuals, that is college professors usually, really know a lot of these details that have slipped through the cracks about the importance and the reasons why certain things happen, and especially in the Eastern European arena, Ned's own ethnic background being Armenian. Wow. But you've covered, you've had people talking about Israel and right, Jewish religion and the history of Islam in some cases too. The Russian-Georgian situation has been recent shows also.
The Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes.
The background.
That was a big one, yeah.
Usually, most things have some relationship to the past of which people today, then and now, means present events have some roots in history, and if you don't try to understand them, then you'll never understand how to solve those problems. They're never that easy.
Yeah. I'm going to wrap up this segment with just these few highlights about Asia McGowan, who died tragically, was murdered here at Henry Ford Community College, and just make one comment about college safety precautions and so on about these things. Here's a story from, again, Wednesday, April 15th, Press and Guide. Asia McGowan lit up a room every time she walked into one. The 20-year-old E-course woman loved being on stage and was determined to be successful in front of the camera. While she entertained crowds during high school and college performances and had plans for a career, of course, her chances of making it big ended last Friday. By the way, just in case it's still in your head and you got this wrong, the two knew one another, but initial reports that they were romantically involved were later dispelled. Apparently this person was sort of stalking her, the one that killed her.
He was a student as well?
Yes, he was not reported as a student initially, but apparently he was a student. I'm not sure a current student, but that's what the latest report was. In June 2006, McGowan was honored as an academic all-star in the News Herald newspapers. She graduated fifth in her class at E-Course Community High School with a 3.381 grade point average. At that time, she said she planned to attend Columbia College to major in theater. And there's several in the U.S. There's Columbia University in New York. Columbia College, I think if she was referring to the one nearby, was in
Ohio?
Chicago. No, Chicago. Oh. There's a great radio, TV, fine arts college in downtown Chicago called Columbia College. And a number of students from this area, my students as well as students from Dearborn High School, have gone to Columbia College. In fact, Kirk Engfer, who was the significant editor and co-producer of two of Michael Moore's documentary features, Bowling for Columbine and Fahrenheit 9/11, graduated from Taylor, Michigan High School, came here to the college, was my student, went on to Columbia College for a little while, just a little while, too. So It is a place that is known by telecom and fine arts students as a great place to go. Apparently, it says she wanted a career in acting, dancing, or broadcasting. She started here at the college and, of course, could transfer almost all of our credits. We're known for that, folks, to Columbia for the last couple of years. Her advice to underclassmen was, quote, be a leader in all situations. Whatever you decide to do, don't give up. And remember, the real truth of happiness is the acknowledgement of knowing that you accomplished something, unquote. During her high school years, she was a cheerleader and ran track. She was involved also with the Mosaic Youth Theater in Detroit. Now, memorial service and funeral, that was today, and that's already concluded at the Mount Zion Baptist Church in E-Course. So that's already happened. But as I said, we will put more information about the Asia McGowan Memorial Fund that's now been set up on campus in our broadcast for the next week, as well as the service on campus. It's going to happen sometime next Thursday, and I don't know the exact date for that because it isn't posted here. But that is on a pre-recorded spot we'll have available. We'll be running.
You can use the internet for the college.
Yeah, that's all at hfcc.edu. It's probably even the memorial service and the additional information for the Asia McGowan Memorial Fund, which I've been told is going to go into helping to pay the cost for funeral expenses. There may be other purposes. If there's extra money that it may be given to, I'm sure the parents have say over what the money is best spent for.
She was a young woman living with her parents.
Apparently, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all we know right there, folks. So my condolences, and all of the college, of course, our condolences go out to her and her family.
Is there any other corrections that were in the news that you know that you could correct for the audience?
No, I'm not interested in going any further. But we already pointed out four or five things that were not substantial. But it is the nature of news, folks. Just like I say, if you hear me say something, number one, I could have it wrong. And people have corrected me, thank you. But I keep telling you that everyone on radio and TV gets it a little bit wrong most of the time. And some of the time they get it a lot wrong, and you need to listen to, you know, more than one TV channel, more than one newscast. You need to read about it. You need to delay opinions and action based on those stories for a few days until you can get a better overview, a more complete picture, and some of the inaccuracies can be resolved. As we used to say in college, don't jump to contusions about things. Don't get yourself in trouble because you drew conclusions that weren't really valid, but somebody said they were.
And beware of the person that interviews you on anything you say, it's distorted.
Whenever you get interviewed and then you read, if you ever have that moment and you're on television,
too many of them.
You have, Ned. Okay. There's always a little something wrong, and maybe it doesn't matter, but a couple times it does in my 40-year history of being interviewed by this or that. But it's the nature of the game. You know, there's different points of view, but there's also errors that human beings commit, even with the best intentions. And then, of course, there's those people that have the worst of intentions that lie on purpose to get their own points of view across.
You say a paragraph, and they decide which sentence they want to repeat.
That's why I love the fact we have two Dearborn papers, and I know investigative fact-checking journalism takes time, and often they don't have time or the money to pay people to put in the time. But that is totally essential to our democratic system, the fact that we're losing the news and the free press rather rapidly as ways to check facts and relay information in Detroit is a tragedy, too. All across the country, we are scrambling to find accurate, continuing sources of information in order to base our lives on. You know, what are we going to do today, tomorrow? What plans should we make? How should we handle our money? What choices should we make on things? And you have to get more than one point of view, and you have to make sure you have credible sources. But even the best sources, like this show, is not everything. You know, and you must not jump to contusions based on just one point of view, even if it seems authoritative. Oh, he must know, he's on the radio, he's on, she's on television. Or Ned Apigian says, you know, that's heaven great, forbid. But, and Ned knows what he knows. Yes, he does. But none of us know everything about everything. And often we do the best we can to generalize.
You brought up a very good point now about the loss of what you called investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
With the loss of the newspapers and they're not, constricting their efforts, their reporters are going. And what's happening is the loss of the investigative reporter. So now that you can read everything you want to read on the internet, mm-hmm. the shrinking of the newspapers and their economic viability is changing the value of the free press in mm-hmm. the sense of its investigative,
just
as you mentioned.
Right. Just one last story here from the Press and Guide on Wednesday, and that talks about HFCC. The headline says HFCC to check safety measures, from Jason Carmel Davis. On the front page it begins, and of course, since there was this unfortunate shooting here, it does require people to review these things. Well, we have our security forces, and we have a team, and we have a safety emergency plan in place about what to do, and I believe that our security people were notified rather quickly when this person who committed this terrible crime came on campus. I think his shotgun was visible.
Lord have mercy, yeah, I read that.
And so within minutes, we were calling the Dearborn Police to come out in force, as they are called, and they get here quick. They get here within minutes, folks.
They were called before the incident? Because someone saw the shotgun?
No. At about the time the police were on their way, my understanding in terms of the time frame, Asia McGowan was shot. Within a few minutes after that, the Dearborn SWAT team was entering the Fine Arts Building. And it's at that point that they heard the second shot, which was...
suicidal shot.
Yeah, the person committing suicide. So maybe he did that because he heard the police coming in, or it was just the end of his, apparently a couple minutes went by in between and, there. But so, yeah, the police were already on their way in force, and they're the professionals to really take care of these things. And so it only took minutes to get them here after this person was seen on campus with the shotgun.
And what I don't know, was this in a classroom with other students? Were other children, other students at risk in all this?
My understanding, and it's not specific in either one of these papers,
right.
And it may be somewhere here, but my understanding, as I was told last week, is that the...
Because a shotgun in the classroom.
Yeah, the man took Asia into a classroom where there weren't anyone else, and then he shot her in there. And it would be more tragic if it was done in front of others. I know that the fear and panic in the building was, and everyone was told to stay in their classrooms. And almost immediately when the word went out, we sent people around to every building across the campus. There's representatives that said, lockdown, stay in the rooms. Don't go in the halls. Don't go anywhere. Just stay in your rooms. And that was in every building on campus. So that was kind of mobilization we did almost instantly after the word went out. And it was even during my show that someone came to WHFR and told us don't go outside, to keep everything minimized until the police came to assess the situation. And they went directly to the Fine Arts Building. So there may have been other people that saw it. I do not believe that other people saw this happen. They saw the man with his gun. They saw him take Asia McGowan to the classroom. That, again, very terrible. But we did have a plan in place. And if you want to compare, this is public knowledge, you want to compare the safety record of any sort of criminal events, whether it's a robbery, beating, murder, of Henry Ford Community College with U of MD, or any individual neighborhood in Dearborn, and compare it to any individual neighborhood elsewhere, you'll see that we're one of the safest places around in terms of number of events like this. In fact, since I've been here now 40 21 years at the college as a full-time person and now as a retired person. But it's the first time I know we've had a gun discharged as part of a crime on campus. There have been a couple times people brought weapons on campus for a variety of reasons, but never necessarily, as far as we know, intended to discharge them. They just brought them with them. One person, unfortunately at the time, a vice president of the United States was making a speech here, so SWAT team jumped on him, but he never even got anywhere near, and we don't know if he intended to fire it at the vice president, whoever it was at the time. It wasn't Dick Cheney, folks. By the way, it's way, way, way back, you know, since I've been here 40 years. And so I think I would have known, you know, I would have known. So this has never happened before. That'd be my guess, since the college started in 1938. And it does happen, unfortunately, a lot of places in our society. No place is safe. Doesn't mean we have to have fear and trembling. As I always say at the end of the show, and I don't intend it, but it comes to be my last words usually on each show, you know, have a great weekend, but or something like that. And be careful out there. Be careful out there. You have to be careful whatever you do, right? You can't get into anything in a crazy way or, you know, try to minimize risk. But it doesn't mean that you run scared from, well, traveling or going to a live concert or going to school. You know, the worst tragedy would be is if this person, by doing this crazy, senseless, brutal act, would stop education from happening in the last 4 weeks of this semester, you know. And it, yes, he did. And this is also tragic. He did eliminate a couple days of education from happening for our more than 15,000 students. And that's tragic, too, in terms of, you know, the consequences. Now, probably, and what's a couple extra days off, somebody might say, but I think it's tragic. Any day you don't get a chance to learn more and be better is a tragedy, a personal tragedy for the individual, too, not minimizing what happened to Asia McGowan at all. Any person's death diminishes me, and my final opinion, which is not necessarily that of anyone at Henry Ford Community College, although I hope so, but they didn't tell me to say this either, folks. It's our usual disclaimer, is that there's innocent people that are dying around the world every day, tens of thousands, by crime and violence that they don't cause. They don't even bring it upon themselves. And so we have a lot to grieve each day and to try to plan and direct a way that that anywhere is not going to happen again. We can't police the world as the United States. But there are things all of us can do, even just little things, in terms of teaching our kids the right way to respond to difficult situations. And that's how we have to move ahead. We have to move ahead. This is another moment when we reflect on that, and we must never forget that every day tragedies equal to this are happening one place or the other, and we're all kind of in it together, aren't we, in this world and in this country.
Some things are not preventable, and the school is not
right.
A prison.
Right, no.
It is a school, and if you want every school to act as if it's a federal office building, try going to Washington and walk in and out of those buildings. There's a long line through metal detectors. Go to the federal office building in Detroit. I don't think we're going to come to that. And you cannot stop the crazies in the world from doing crazy things. You just can't prevent it.
Yeah, I know. You can try to avoid it. You can try to have safety plans and measures in place like we did, and they all...
It worked good.
Worked. It was a matter of minutes, folks. If the SWAT team would have got here, and they got here real quick, if the SWAT team just 5 minutes earlier, and it's not their fault for getting it when they did, they got here amazingly fast. This person was very intent on doing what he wanted to do quick. I mean,
imagine if he didn't come with a shotgun or a rifle. He came with a pistol, which would have been concealed. Nobody would have seen it.
Well, right. Yeah. And when he got here, it was rather quick. We understand that he took Asia McGowan from wherever she was in the Fine Arts Building and took her into this, at the time, vacant classroom and then shot her. And it wasn't more than a couple minutes. And so, you know, the response here to the college, I think, was extremely admirable and mm-hmm. you know, we have done everything we could, and we have measures in place. It's you can't live in an armed state.
And this is the place to come for your education, because you can't do much better than that.
Well, thank you, Ned. That's an unrequested plug there.
And I started at the Miller School in East Dearborn. Do you remember the Miller School?
Yes.
It's now gone.
Yeah, we became an administrative headquarters, right, I think, for a while for part of our district.
The blessing is the following.
Yes.
That maniac with a shotgun could have went into a classroom, and you can't just shooting it off once could have hurt 20 people.
Mm-hmm. Here's, as long as we've gone this far on it, and people are still thinking about this. Here's a guest editorial, or part of it, from Yumika Stevens, is a nurse practitioner with Henry Ford Health Systems Behavioral Health Services in Dearborn. And here's her comment on this. It says, be careful who you let into your inner circle. Unexpected acts of violence, such as when one student kills another, as happened at Henry Ford Community College, leave us wondering not just why, but how it might have been prevented. Federal statistics show homicide is the second leading cause of death among the young. And it's usually somebody you know.
Right, that's
interesting. Usually somebody you know.
You know.
Yeah, it's not a stranger. And right. While males are most often killed by strangers, female victims are more often, overall, male-female together, it's right. Somebody you know. Female victims are more often killed as part of a domestic situation or someone they know in this case. What happened on the HFCC campus appears to bear more of a resemblance to stalking than domestic violence. Still, there are lessons to be learned from both types of situations. Although it's been said repeatedly, the message isn't always getting through that violence is never the answer. Thank you, Yumika. I said that earlier. And there is never a reason to tolerate it.
Yeah, but if you complain about a stalker to the police, nothing happens.
No, I think you need to.
I know, but nothing much happened.
Well, my understanding, and from a couple times that I know it took place, is Michigan has an extremely useful and harsh anti-stalking law. The few times that I know it took place, nobody's ever stalked me, darn it. But right. If it was, stalking is never positive. But yeah. But others that I know of here have had that incident, and when they reported it to the police investigated, didn't use torture, but they put the fear of God, the police God anyway, fear of the police God, into these people, and it pretty much eliminated the problem. So you do need some tough love, whether it's from police or others, to straighten out behavior like that.
All the TV programs I've ever seen about it all end up tragically with stories of they were warned, and nothing happened.
Yeah. And Yumika Stevens goes on to say, postings on sites such as Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube have given people a false sense of intimacy and made it easier for some to stalk their victims. Common status updates such as, I'm in line for coffee, or heading out for a run, increase a stalker's belief that he or she is part of your life. I mean, if they can read about what you're doing every day, then they think they're really there with you, even though
it's... Is that what people do?
Oh, yes. That's the whole point of Twitter, as I understand it, is because you're limited to something like 140 words a time. And so you just, for your Twitter website, you send your text
information about yourself.
What you're doing exactly that minute and what you're thinking exactly that minute.
And what is the point of that?
To get responses, to get closer to your friends.
God.
Your friends get closer to you, but also anybody can get to that website who has an account either with Twitter or Facebook and begin getting close to you. So if you see somebody you want to know more about, you can go to their website, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, and get really close to them every day, every minute, their thoughts. Of course, they don't know you, and there's a lot of other compatibility issues, folks, other than just, they like running. I like running. So this person makes an extremely good point, and as a parent, I would suggest to other parents to point this out. In fact, there's a very good TV commercial for a cell phone. Just because you have unlimited minutes on your cell phone doesn't mean you have to tell everybody everything. And that same thing is what she's saying here. Just because you can tell them everything about yourself every minute doesn't mean you're going to have more friends. It also puts you at risk, too, of people that you don't really want to know you that way or know where you are at every moment if they want to come and get you.
Does she have a solution?
Well, when posting, she says, keep such schedule information to a minimum and provide very few details. She says these sites also give people access to your interactions with friends and family they would not normally be privy to. Anyone who has access can see your conversations with others along with pictures of your life and places you've been. You know, people are posting photos of themselves, photos of their friends. Oh, my gosh, there can be a voyeur through the videos and blogs that you post. And, you know, somebody watching for not very positive reasons. One protective measure social networking site users can take is controlling who can access their updates. It goes against the way many people use these sites, but getting as many friends as you can and giving them access to your thoughts and actions has the potential to create problems. At the very least, she says, think about who you accept as a friend and use the security settings to limit the information people outside your group of friends can see. It's unfortunate people need to take these precautions, but this false sense of intimacy can spur jealous and obsessive behavior. Now, we don't know, and it doesn't state here, if Asia was on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, but most students are. Not just college, but high school students.
Really?
Yeah. And
well, my understanding is she'd never encouraged this person and really well, had anything to do with
it. And I understand that that's what she did. Other than existing, she told this person who asked, I heard eight times, but you know, constantly, can we go out?
I see.
She said no. No, she said no. And seems like a nice person. She probably said no nicely, but it wasn't a no that he heard. It doesn't mean she should have spoken louder. It wasn't, you know, he was obsessed.
I guess no was dramatized differently as depending on the number of times it's given.
Well, it has to do with the listener, too.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you don't take no for an answer. You've heard that many times.
What part of no don't you understand?
Exactly, yeah. And so some people aren't listening very well, and in, you know, in the olden days, too, and I mean in the 50s, and I know you're not as old as I am, Ned.
Actually, I'm old.
Well, don't say. You remember then among you know, sexist guys, and it was the norm to be this macho way in the 50s if you were a teenager then.
What was that?
If a girl said no, she probably meant yes. Go ahead, kiss her. And
I think I remember hearing that.
That it's sort of a little temptation. No, I don't want you to kiss me. Hey, I'm going to kiss you anyway, baby. You know, that we used to have that attitude. It was totally wrong, you know, totally wrong and totally unappreciative. But, of course, women were thought to be the, you know, a different kind of person. And women, of course.
They weren't supposed to say yes. That was the idea.
Right. They weren't supposed to say yes to good girls. Girls don't say yes, but in fact, a lot of young people wanted to try experiences, and so it happened anyway. So you guys wouldn't really know if what they said was true or not, or a little flirtation, and so they just went ahead anyway in some cases. And sometimes it could be called rape, and other times the girls just acquiesced, because what else is a woman to do in the 50s? You got to get married. You don't get a job of your own. Your parents aren't in favor of that or support you in education. I mean, this is still in the 50s. It's pretty much the case. It was only in the 50s that women started seeing that young women, that maybe there could be a future in which they could be independent and an individual, even within a marriage. You know, that they had a right to say yes and no.
Based on the ads I hear on television, okay. I wish it was the 50s. I'll tell you the honest to God truth. I don't know what I'd be doing if I had to sit in a room with my children or my grandchildren and decide whether I was going to shut the television off or leave the room.
Well, there's so many things to challenge a parent these days and to set rules about it. And even how do you, with the media everywhere, you know, the internet, your wireless laptop, whatever, everywhere, your smartphone, how do you police a rule that you set, too? I saw a couple out for dinner, fancy restaurant right here in Dearborn, or a nice restaurant, and they had their, like, 10-year-old daughter with them. She would not stop texting people on her cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad said several times, okay, that's enough. Now we're going to eat. And so the food comes, and she flips it back open, and under the table, I could see from the side, she is still texting back and forth. And the parents kind of knew that, and they didn't stop it. Now, of course, you make a scene at a fancy restaurant by taking it away from the kid, and they yell and scream. I don't know if she would have at age 10 or not.
I'll give you my own experience at that. I have a daughter that lives in Boston, and she has children. And it's not too often that my wife and I go to Boston and have dinner with everyone. And my oldest granddaughter was doing that exact same thing, only I couldn't say anything about it, right?
Yeah, well, of course not.
Her father took the thing away and took her out of the room. I mean, you're here with me now. You can do those other silly things when you're alone or something.
Yeah. Well, we're going to switch topics, as I said.
Have you heard of Reunion? I'm getting bombarded on my computer with this thing. Somebody put my name on a thing called Reunion. And if you fill in the information, so-called people looking for you is easier to find, and I could be looking for somebody. I write them nasty letters. I refrain from swearing.
Right.
Take me off this thing. I didn't ask for you. I don't even know if it costs anything. But it's called Reunion.
Reunion.com or something.
Right, yeah. Something like that.
Well, I don't know. I know on Facebook, just exploring it as a good telecom teacher has to do. I have a YouTube account. I have a Facebook account. I don't have a Twitter account because I refuse to tweet, as they call it.
What's the difference between these, Facebook or YouTube?
I don't want to go into it. It's too complicated.
It's too complicated.
But Facebook, as soon as I start an account, because I put in some personal information, which I security blocked, but that still allowed me to instantly see people that were on Facebook from my high school graduation in 64. Instantly it popped up these about 10 other people.
Because of your information, they gave you what you thought you'd be interested in.
And my college graduation year, all these people have Facebook accounts. And like, I'm the last one to get a Facebook account almost. And my high school class in Flat Rock High was only 100 people, and 10 of them had Facebook accounts. And so it automatically linked you to all the people that had anything in common with your education or where you were. I don't know. It was scary.
Is for people to have lost contact with one another to find each other?
To reconnect, to get friends, to, you know, and I know socialization is important, and having friends, good friends, close friends, is extremely useful. I'm not in favor of large networks of people that don't really know me. And so I'm kind of weird. A lot of people think I'm strange that I don't have
a
large circle of friends.
To our listeners, I didn't know this problem because I'm a person that has run for office, and if you Google me, I will come up.
Yeah.
And if somebody puts a lie about you on the internet and somebody Googles you, that lie comes up. And a friend asked me, how do I get rid of this? I said, you can't. What you have to do is put things about you that are more current, that are more favorable. Mm-hmm. That disappears. It goes in the background, and as you're Googled, the latest thing comes up. You are now on the board of directors of a military academy in Indiana, a famous one. I forget its name now. These things, not only don't get lost, they tend to haunt you if somebody maliciously puts something about you there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there should be a.
I didn't know that.
A new media survival and protection class in high school, if not in junior high, for students, because a professional who really knows things like the behavioral psychologist from Henry Ford Hospital, who wrote the editorial that we featured.
We just read, right?
I mean, somebody needs to itemize that, and unfortunately, most parents are not up on the latest stuff, and they can't give many good instructions about how students should utilize positively and also sensible about utilizing the new media. It's evolving faster. It's almost viral, as they call it.
Well, except for people
what we
like
can
yourself
contain.
Yeah. That know so much about it, most of the kids have to go to their 10-year-old and say, how do I work this thing?
Yeah, I mean, but I didn't specifically know what Facebook was like until 3 months ago. So I'm sort of behind the curve, but not teaching full-time anymore. I guess I can be a little bit behind the curve.
But you need to know that based on what you do.
Yeah, sure. Okay, first of all, there's only 8 minutes to go before...
What's happening in the mayoral races?
Let's talk about that. Interesting story there about Doug Thomas, which I only have time to summarize, is that a petition was taken out for him to run for mayor of Dearborn. All right. I don't believe there's, and we'll know in May, there's a deadline for taking out petitions and resubmitting them so you can get on the ballot to run for mayor or city council. And that's going to happen officially in November, but there's primaries. There's a primary along the way, and I can't remember I think it's August when there's a primary.
Usually in Michigan.
If there's multiple candidates, then they have to have a primary,
of course. If it's more than double the slate. If you have four people to be elected and you have nine, like in Dearborn Heights, the clerk is complaining. I wish somebody would drop out so I don't have to have a primary.
Right. But I think for mayor, if there's three people, then there'll still be a primary to reduce it down to two. I'm not sure. But in any event, people were wondering. Yeah, Doug Thomas has doubled
the slate.
Right? City Councilman Doug Thomas has run before, I think twice before, for mayor. And not been successful. You've got the story in front of you there, but and he's a very interesting fellow. Got a lot of interesting ideas. I don't agree with all of them, but he has been right on a lot of things that have happened in Dearborn in the last decade, even. And people wouldn't listen to him in advance. And so, what's curious here is and amazing, I guess, is that he didn't take out this petition.
Yeah, here's what it says here, according to an employee in the clerk's office. When Thomas went to pull his petitions for council on the same day, he was surprised to see his name under the mayoral heading. Mm-hmm. I didn't know someone else could pull petitions for you.
Yes, apparently they can. But he has to decide by that cutoff date, the article says, which way he's going to go. He can't run for both at the same time.
He has 3 days after the closing to
decide which way to go. Yeah.
He can say no.
Right.
So, even though he's turned in his petitions.
What, take a look there and see if you can tell us the date. What is that final deadline for petitions?
If there's a date here. It's May 12th. I know May 12th. Date.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's the same in Dearborn.
So we'll find out and give you a report on that. Next week on this show, here's a promo for next show, our Radiothon version of the new WHFR Journal. If you like this show and think there's any value in it, maybe you'd want to pledge during our hour, and we will have pledge phone call type people on hand, whether it's Ned or Lynn, who's coming in for the show today, I guess, to help Joanne on in the special Radiothon kickoff show.
Oh, that's right. Joanne has today. The honor of being. I thought right. I was first Sunday at 9 o'clock.
No, and we'll talk about that, Ned. By the way, Mayor O'Reilly himself, Mayor John B. O'Reilly, will be interviewed on this show next Friday by yours truly. Now, he's not going to be in town at the time, but he wants to do this. He knows it's a special show, and so he's going to be here next Friday via phone from someplace that he has to be as
What's
mayor.
What's the occasion of the date?
It's a radiothon broadcast of the new WHFR Journal.
See.
It's
that's
very
the,
special. Every year we try to get Dearborn's mayor to come in, Mayor Guido or Mayor
on the
O'Reilly.
First date.
Yeah, they always come in on and have a special interview because it's a special week for us. And by the way, it's also National Volunteer Week, starting on Sunday all the way from the 19th to the 25th, the exact dates of our pledge drive. Did we plan that? No. But, you know, that our country as a whole has said that we got to respect those volunteers, and we do, and we hope you will too. People like Ned and Lynn and Joanne, who's going to be here in a few moments, they work for zero, and that's not right, but that is because they want to do this, because it's important to get the message out on local media and the entertainment too.
Zero wouldn't be bad. It costs us money. What are you talking about?
Well, each year I personally double the salary of our volunteers. Of course, two times zero is still zero, but it's what I always say.
Are you
going
to get the college president and the college to come on? Same time?
I have at times.
Why don't we do
that? I think they're. They're always willing. They're, Dr. Mee and the other presidents have never said no.
And the controller.
In town. Well, the money person. But, no, they give us a secure budget. It's part of our effort. If we're doing good work here, the community tells us we are, not only by phone calls and emails, which we get a lot of, and they're almost all positive, thank you very much, throughout the year, but by making a donation, whether you call it a token donation or real money, the donations, the pledges of support keep us going. And we've been very successful in the past 24 years with that kind of support. It is the way that non-commercial media survives. And so starting this afternoon in a few minutes, that's what's going to happen.
And I think the nicest thing you said at our meeting was there are only about 5 non-commercial radio stations out of the 90 or so in our region.
Yeah, that people can tune into. And some are lower power than us even and may not be. I think we're the only, other than WDET, that's the only 2 non-commercial stations you can listen to in Dearborn over the air. I wanted to conclude today, and thank you very much, Ned, but we want to get Joanne's show on the Pledge Drive kickoff, the pre-Radiothon, Radiothon Pledge Show of Highway 61, our blues program, going on schedule. And so we want to conclude this show. I don't usually play a song, but in lieu of everything that's happened in many ways in our society, I'm going to ask Mayor O'Reilly next week about you know, how that stimulus money is coming in and other things that are happening in Dearborn for the better. Here's a blues song before Joanne's show starts from Blues Review Magazine sampler this month. And I thought by title alone, but it's a very good tune.
And she's here. It's
performed by Mark Nomad. It's entitled Got to Carry On. So hope you can have a good weekend, folks. Take care out there. By all means, this is WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Stop the shooting, no way to carry on.